Welcome back to Midpoint, folks. I'm your host, Shelley Reback, on this beautiful April 8th. Yesterday, according to our so-called president, he was planning to nuke Iran at 8 p.m. if Iran didn't capitulate to his profanity-ridden demands for complete surrender. And even though he didn't nuke them, and he didn't bomb them back to the Stone Age, he threatened to continue to commit war crimes by taking out their electrical grid, bridges, desalinization plants, and other infrastructure needed for, you know, life. Thankfully, he tacoed out at the last minute and proclaimed a two-week truce. The best-case scenario now, according to Ben Rhodes, who was one of Obama's advisors, is that he struck a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz that was open before the pointless war he started, with Iran demonstrating its control over the strait and potentially extracting fees plus sanctions relief now. Thousands of innocents, including hundreds of children, are dead in Iran, dead in Lebanon, for no reason. U.S. troops have been killed and wounded. U.S. embassies and bases in the Middle East are badly damaged. United States standing in the world has been obliterated. United States munitions are badly depleted. Hundreds of billions of dollars spent increasing our national debt. Prices are up everywhere. More global economic fallout is yet to come. Putin has been strengthened and enriched, and it's just a catastrophic situation, even in the best of circumstances. It's a profoundly shameful episode in American history, no matter what happens next. So I have to ask, what was it all for? What was it all for? You know, Trump's crazy defiance and absolute insanity now, firing 30 generals who counseled him against war with Iran, tweeting on his personal social media channel, and lying about negotiations to extricate him from this ill-advised, violent adventure, he called it, in Iran. This has all made manifest the need for his useful idiot cabinet to finally wake up and 25th Amendment him. He's demented and dangerous. How can they let him remain in charge of the nukes and the military? Will no one in our government say the emperor has no clothes? He's got to go. Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest, said King Henry II of England in 1170? And the next thing we know, Henry's outburst led four knights to murder the Archbishop Thomas Becket in Canterbury Cathedral. So history is a great teacher, you know, but that's all I'm going to say about that. Now, turning back to Florida, this is the week when all the bad legislation our legislators left to the end of the session hits the governor's desk and turns into law. One of the worst pieces of legislation, now the law in Florida, is the Florida Save Act, the voter suppression law that is going to make it extremely difficult, especially for many married women who've changed their name, to register and vote in Florida, because they will have to prove their citizenship with records that match their current name. It will potentially suppress the votes of hundreds of thousands of people in Florida. Now, you've probably heard that a similar law is pending in the U.S. Congress. That one hasn't passed yet. But Florida, always want to be ahead of the pack in suppressing the rights of its people, has passed its own SAVE Act. We are going to hear all about this new Florida law today from my guests, Teresa Potter, co-president of the League of Women Voters of Hillsborough and Pasco County, and Amy Keith, Common Cause Florida's executive director. My guests represent the two organizations, along with Hispanic and immigrant rights groups and the Florida NAACP, that are suing over this new law. And we will be hearing from them in a few minutes, right after our news nuggets of the week. I know you are going to have questions for them about your own voting status, and I encourage you to call in early during the live show when we're discussing this law so we can get you on and get your questions answered. We are at 813-239-9663, email to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. But first, we have to talk about the other most odious piece of legislation that Governor DeSantis signed this week. Although Texas did this one first, DeSantis caught up and signed legislation on Monday, allowing him to identify and label domestic terrorist organizations. And he said state police were already building cases against several of them, including the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, and the Muslim Brotherhood. And next, he says he's coming for the Venezuelan gang Trendagua and for Antifa. You'll recall, if you're a regular listener, that I've been railing against this absolutely unconstitutional effort to demonize and criminalize certain groups, these groups in particular, ever since DeSantis tried to accomplish the same thing by issuing an executive order to that effect. CARE sued to enjoin enforcement of the executive order, and they won a preliminary injunction banning enforcement of the order on domestic terrorist organizations and all its provisions on First Amendment grounds. The court told DeSantis he couldn't do that, just declare an organization to be a domestic terrorist organization, let alone declare it in a secret process and deprive it and its members of the rights and privileges afforded any other groups and any other people. Almost immediately, the Florida legislature then took up the challenge and passed a law giving DeSantis the power to do just that. According to the Tampa Bay Times, HB 1471, passed by the legislature last month, allows the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to identify groups as domestic terrorists and gives them powers typically reserved only for the federal government. Groups would have to be found engaging in terrorist activity as defined in state law and pose an ongoing threat to security. The governor and the cabinet would have to approve the designation. The bill provides no new powers to arrest or prosecute such organizations, but instead, it would bar state and local governments from providing any public money to them, making it a response to reports of Islamic schools receiving public school vouchers. The bill would also immediately expel any college students found to support terrorist organizations. Critics believe this is an attempt to stamp out left-wing and anti-Israel protesters on college campuses. A University of South Florida student who spoke at Monday's news conference referenced the 2024 pro-Palestinian protests at USF, in which 10 people were arrested, mostly for misdemeanors such as trespassing. But under this new law, those students would be expelled. How CARE would fit the state's definition of terrorist activity, which requires either an illegal act of violence or a computer hacking crime, is still a mystery. Spokespeople for DeSantis did not respond to questions about that. The federal government has not deemed CARE a terrorist organization. And further, how is the state going to prove Antifa is an organization is also a mystery. If Antifa is an organization, I want to speak to the membership coordinator because I have yet to receive my membership card or my check from George Soros, which Republicans keep telling me I'm getting. So while I'm waiting for my check from George Soros, let's talk about the Florida SAVE Act. Yet another means of voter suppression brought to you by the Republican-controlled Florida legislature. But first, let me welcome my guests. Teresa Potter is now the co-president of the League of Women Voters of Hillsborough and Pasco Counties. So we're happy to have you with us, Teresa.
Good morning, everybody.
And Amy Keith is the executive director of Common Cause Florida, and she's with us today. Thanks for being here, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's jump right in. What is the Florida SAVE Act? It's not the federal SAVE Act, which we keep hearing about, which hasn't passed. All right, who wants to take that?
I mean, I'll go. So this bill, so it's the number is HB 991, and it's truly a voter suppression bill here in the state of Florida, which will block thousands of Florida voters from being able to cast a ballot and have it count. Basically by saying that you have to have evidence of citizenship on file in order to be able to vote. So it is putting up these ridiculous burdens and hurdles in front of Floridians who have been voting for years. So U.S. citizens who have been voting for years, if they don't have the right evidence on file, they would not be able to remain on the voter rolls to cast a ballot and have it count.
And we're talking about citizens who have the right to vote. We're not talking about non-citizens. We're talking about citizens who have the right to vote, who now may be excluded from voting because of the additional burdens placed on voting by the Florida Save Act. Now, why can Florida do this? I guess we should point out that traditionally, or is it constitutionally, I know it's a matter of law, it's the states that are responsible for running elections and developing the rules around voting. And that's why different states have different rules about voting, like, you know, how many days of early voting you have, or, you know, what time the polls are open and closed, and whether you can drop off your ballot, and how to get a vote by mail ballot. These are things that individual states have control over.
Yes, it's common sense if you think about it. It's not addressed in the Constitution. Anything that's not addressed in the Constitution is a state's right.
But there you go.
If you think back to it, in the very beginning.
The 11th Amendment, right?
Yeah, in the very beginning, only white male property owners had the right to vote. And over time, we know the most about, as League of Women Voters, the most about women voters. So New Jersey let women vote for a little while and then took the right of way. And then
I think it was in Oklahoma first, but
Wyoming.
Yeah, Wyoming.
First,
maybe that's
next
it.
After New Jersey.
Yeah,
gave it and then took it away. So it's always been a states' rights issue. It's never been the federal government. It's not in the Constitution itself. So states determine that.
So now, as we follow the news, we see that Trump wants to federalize voting. He doesn't like the fact that states control voting, right? What's he working toward? He wants a national voter database?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do see this effort to, take away that state's rights to run elections. We're seeing that in a couple different ways, but certainly this attempt to allow the federal government or the president to decide the special list of these are the people who are allowed to vote across the United States is an absolutely egregious way to take away the rights of states and take away the rights of U.S. citizens to hold his administration accountable. And it does appear that this is something done because there's a fear of accountability. I mean, that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we are talking about citizens who have the right to vote. We're not talking about non-citizens. We are talking these voter suppression rules, laws, are directed towards citizens who have the right to vote.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a claim that they are passed to provide greater election integrity, to prevent non-citizens from voting. But that's never really been a problem, has it?
I think anybody who is concerned about us having safe and free elections should be extremely concerned about thousands of U.S. citizens being blocked from voting. U.S. citizens who have been voting their entire lives suddenly not being able to vote. If you're concerned about safe and free elections in Florida and in the United States, you should be really worried about a government that's trying to kick thousands of U.S. citizens off the rolls.
And there's already historical precedents for this, because Kansas put a law like this into effect in 2016, and there were 35,000 citizens who were kicked off the polls and couldn't vote. So it was repealed.
It was found unconstitutional
in 2018.
Yeah, it was found unconstitutional. But, you know, this is a very common, and it seems to be part of the Republican playbook, to put these blatantly unconstitutional laws in place, like the Florida Save Act, like the domestic terrorist law, and wait to be sued. And then because the path through the court system takes so long, you know, they're able to get they're able to effectuate some of the, you know, suppression that they are working toward by passing the law in the first place, even though in the end they may lose in the courts. I mean, I see that time and time again with some of these these acts. In fact, both your organizations, along with Hispanic immigrant rights organizations, the Florida NAACP, and others are suing, right? Are suing over this Florida SAVE Act because it is unconstitutional, according to your lawsuit, right?
Fortunately, I think it's important to note at this point that the law does not take effect for these elections that are coming up. So it won't affect anybody's ability to vote in August and November of 2026.
Okay.
Since it doesn't go into effect until January of 2027, we're hoping that this lawsuit can have an impact so that there's a little bit of time here to possibly see that this doesn't happen.
Yeah, of course, you know, it will go all the way up to the Florida Supreme Court, which is a wholly owned entity of DeSantis and the Republicans in the Florida political administration. But okay, maybe, you know, we'll see. But I know that that's something that DeSantis is anticipating because that's what he says. You know, he says, I pass these things, I sign these things into law, and then they sue me. And so we know that he's anticipating a lawsuit.
We can talk more about why there's a lawsuit.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, so also just to know that this is a lawsuit in federal court, not in state court. And we brought this litigation because we do believe that this law is unlawful and because it targets, you know, communities of color. You know, and I think what we want to stress is just the excessive barriers and burdens that this really puts on voters in order to be able to exercise their right to vote. And, you know, obviously we will let the courts decide the legal questions and we'll let the lawyers talk about the lawyer stuff. But I think it's really important to focus on, you know, what is the real world impact of this on Floridians if it goes into effect? So if this law is able to come into effect, in January 2027, which is, as Teresa said, when this law would come into effect for voters, it is a kind of weird law the way it works. But my real concern is, so anybody who doesn't have a valid Florida driver's license or Florida state ID is, you know, at real risk and highest risk from this law. So that means elderly people who don't drive anymore, don't have a valid driver's license. That means anybody who hasn't been able to acquire their driver's license. That means students who don't have a driver's license. All of those people, they're going to get very likely caught up into this law and have to run through the rigmarole of, you know, getting additional documents, paying for additional documents, and presenting those in order to be able to register to vote, change their voter registration, or just to stay on the rolls and keep
voting. Now, there's been a lot of talk about married women being impacted by this law. Why is that?
Well, married women would have to show more documentation than just a birth certificate in many cases, because your birth certificate name no longer matches your Florida driver's license name. And that's not just married women. It's anybody who's changed their name for any reason.
Right. So, but it's a lot of married women who change their name.
Right. So you would, you know, this is providing in-person documentation to prove that you're a citizen. So now for anybody who has changed their name, a lot of married women, you have to have your driver's license and a legal document that shows that it was a legal name change, whether it's a marriage license or other court order. And as we know, besides all of the other reasons that it can be expensive to get this documentation, we know that there have been a lot of natural disasters in Florida. We know it's very likely that people who had a last-minute flood, like Helene, which was not expected to flood like that, so people didn't leave with their documents, no longer have those documents and have to pay to get them again. And who knows how long that will take.
Right, right. And they're not, and many people are transplants to Florida. Mm-hmm. They weren't born here. Their documents reside in another state. And it's very burdensome, both in terms of effort and money, to get those documents that would allow you to prove your citizenship. A birth certificate, for example, is not sufficient because it doesn't establish anything. It just, you know, it doesn't establish that your parents were citizens. It doesn't establish, I mean, you know, it doesn't, I don't know. Would that be, I mean, could today, is a birth certificate sufficient?
Yeah, so the way that the Florida bill is written, a birth certificate of a, you know, registering that you were born here in the United States, that is considered as proof of citizenship. But of course, it would have to, you'd have to show that the name, you'd have to link your current legal name to your birth certificate name. So if you've been married, divorced, you would have to show those additional documents as well.
Wow.
But birth certificate, now, the interesting thing about this law is that the administration of this law has not been figured out yet. So we know that a birth certificate will be accepted.
Well, it'll be accepted as of today. But as we also know, the question of birthright citizenship is pending in the United States Supreme Court as we speak. The argument about that was just last week, right?
That's true.
We could lose birthright citizenship completely.
I think that, I mean, I think a lot of people looked at that, and even, you know, our conservative Supreme Court appears to be questioning a lot of the arguments that were put forward there. So I wouldn't want to make voters nervous in advance about that. We know that under the Florida law, a birth certificate is specifically listed as accepted. Now, what your birth certificate needs to look like, what counts, you know, what information needs to be on it, does it need to be an original, a certified copy, does it have to have a raised seal, all this type of stuff, we will learn as we see how this law is, you know, how they choose to administer and implement it, which is processes that we'll be watching very closely.
So somebody like J.D. Vance, for example, who's on his like third or fourth name, is going to have to be producing a lot of documents in order to be able to establish that he has a right to vote, right? He's like on his third or fourth name.
Anybody who has a passport...
Yes.
On the other hand, something that's very expensive and a long process to
get. At least $135.
I think it's more than that now in most cases,
yes,
right?
Yes, $65.
Yep. But,
it's gone up.
It's not a quick process, right? So if you don't, if, we have city elections coming up in March 2027. If people aren't planning, for, you know, the systems aren't in place yet for this because they're not needed for the November election. So once it goes into effect, you have to immediately prove things. So, but if you do have a passport, it is considered a citizenship document.
Okay, so if you have a passport, you're good to go, right?
So, yes.
As long as the passport name is the same as the name on your voter registration, right?
Yes, but I do want to, so I want to talk through like one thing that's really different between the Florida version of this and the federal version of this, because I do think this is a huge point of confusion for voters here in Florida. So the Florida version of this law, the Florida voter suppression law, is a what I'd want to call a backdoor proof of citizenship process. Okay, so from the front end, it's not going to, as best we can tell from the implementation now, it's not going to look that different. You are going to register to vote. You know, you can fill out your voter registration form. You put the last four of your social, you put your driver's license number. You make the change to your address. Then what's going to happen is they're going to check you against the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles database. Okay. And if that database has evidence for citizenship on file for you, then the best we understand is they're going to kind of take that as okay.
Well, wait a minute. I didn't have to prove my citizenship when I got my Florida driver's license.
That is correct. But here's the thing that's interesting in Florida. So since August 2017, Florida has only issued real ID, both for driver's licenses and for the state ID that they provide to non-drivers. Now, our driver's licenses are only valid for about 8 years, which means that most of us who have a currently valid Florida driver's license, we have a real ID, and you can tell that because it's got that gold star in the upper right-hand corner. Now, a real ID is not proof of citizenship, but you do have to present evidence that you are legally present in the United States when you get that real ID or in order to get a real ID. So if you presented, for example, a passport in order to show, okay, I'm a U.S. citizen, that's how I'm legally present here, then in the database of the DMV, to the best of our understanding, they actually tick you off as, okay, you're in the citizenship bucket. Okay.
Okay. Now wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Exactly. My license is going to expire on my birthday this year, actually. Mm-hmm. I just pulled it out of my wallet.
Okay.
And I'm looking, and it's going to expire this year. Yep. So that means it's like 8 years old, right?
It doesn't have a gold star?
It has a gold star.
Okay.
But I can tell you, I did not bring my passport to get this license.
So you may have provided other documents. So everybody had to provide documents in order to get their Florida driver's license. It might be that when you originally got your driver's license years ago, you provided documents that were sufficient.
I think I had to show up like electric bill or utilities bill or something, and that was it.
So in order to have that license with the gold star, you did have to show or like identify to the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles that you're legally present in the U.S. That's why one of our concerns with this bill is really about naturalized citizens, because you can, of course, get a driver's license if you are a green card holder and a permanent resident here in the United States. So if you got your driver's license while you were a permanent resident, and then you naturalize, and of course, as soon as you naturalize, one of the things that we know from like the League of Women Voters does voter registration and naturalization ceremonies, people, one of the first things they want to do is be able to vote in our country as soon as they become a citizen. But if you got your driver's license when you were a permanent resident, then the driver's license database might not say you're a citizen, and so you're going to get flagged by this law. So there is all sorts of stuff that can happen with that driver's license database. And to double that, there's a whole bunch of people who registered to vote using their social security number. So we don't know if their voter file even has their driver's license number. And those people might get flagged by this law and have to provide additional documents as well. So we really see this interaction between the driver's license database and the voter registration system, which is what makes this a kind of backdoor process. And on top of all of that, this is going to be administered through notices that go through the mail. So if they flag you, you get a notice in the mail, and you got to respond in 30 days, or you might get kicked off the rolls.
Right, and who knows if you'll receive that notice at your current address.
I don't want to confuse the issue, but we have another issue on top of that, which we're trying to point out to people as League of Women Voters, which is that in the last year and a half, The law went into effect that every time you get a new driver's license in Florida, you get a new driver's license number. So there are if you renew your driver's license online, you now have the ability to check a box that says, do you want to update your voter registration? And you want to check that.
Yes.
That will update your voter registration with your new driver's license number. But that box wasn't there when the law went into effect. So there are people out there that renewed their driver's license in the first year whose driver's license number no longer matches. They may have the last four digits of their social on file, but the driver's license number on file is not matching. So there are some issues with that as well.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, in doing some prep for today's show, I learned that advocates of these changes, the proponents of the Florida Save Act, point out that more than 90% of Floridians already have real IDs, which they claim will remain valid for voter registration next year.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite skewed statistic.
Yeah, because data from the state said that 20.6 million people in Florida had a real ID compliant driver's license, according to State Senator Aaron Growl of Vero Beach.
Yep.
The state counted 872,408 Floridians who did not have the valid form of identification. So in that bucket of 872,408 Floridians, a heck of a lot of them are not going to be able to vote under this, right?
Yeah, so I think that some of the statistics that were thrown around during the legislative hearings on this were absolutely fascinating. So we heard like 99% of people who have a Florida driver's license have, you know, have a real ID. Well, yeah, because like we've only been issuing real IDs since 2017 and our licenses are only good till 8 years. But what about all the people who don't have a Florida driver's license? Then we heard this, 90% of people on the voter rolls actually have a Florida real ID, so they're going to be fine. We're like, okay, that means 10% don't, and that's like over a million people.
Yeah, that's...
So now, when we talk about, we are really concerned about thousands of U.S. citizens being kicked from the rolls, those are the thousands we're talking about.
Right, 872,408 at least.
And we just talked about the fact that having a gold star on your driver's license doesn't necessarily mean you're a citizen.
Yeah, right.
It also doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be safe from this process.
Right. Let me take this phone call from someone who has been very, very patient. Kirk from Clearwater, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah, sorry you had to wait.
That's all right. The court moves way too slow, and they know this.
Yeah.
For example, they will pass a law that they know won't work. Like, for example, you can't dump fish out of a bowl. Well, they'll go on and dump the fish while it goes through the courts. And by the time the court says, oh, you can't do that, hell, the fish are gone.
Right.
They've already done that. And the other thing is, for the sake of y'all's show, all of y'all's show, y'all need to have a rehash light.
A rehash light?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
The same subject has been addressed in the same manner with the same answer more than five times. A little red light goes on that says, move on.
All right. So is that your complaint about the show?
No, or? I'm just mentioning it for your own good. I hear it from all of them again and again and again, the same damn thing.
Yeah, well, you know, we're radio. People are not listening all 24/7, you know.
Oh, I understand that. That's why I say five times.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Kirk from Clearwater. I'm glad you're listening, at least.
And remember the fishbowl.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Okay.
So, we do believe that the litigation could take months to years, and we do want people to be ready for this.
Yeah. That's why we're covering it now.
Yeah.
Even though this won't go into effect until 2027, and it's after the midterms, don't be complacent. Don't sleep on these requirements, because otherwise you could lose your right to vote.
Well, look, and also just knowing where your documents are, is it just a good general practice in our, you know, disaster prone state as it is? You know, do you know where your birth certificate is? Do you know where your passport is? Do you need an updated copy? I think that that's like a general good practice.
Let me ask you, like, we're talking about what you need to be able to vote. Are we talking about bringing these documents for purposes of registration only, or are people going to have to bring these documents to their polling place?
So that they're not going to have to bring them to the polling place. So it really is this kind of backdoor process, and we don't know. So some of this we don't know, but I can tell you, to the best of our knowledge now, things are going to look fine unless you get a notice. So again, this is about watching your mail. You get a notice from the supervisor of elections that will give you instructions about what you need to do and what additional evidence you need to submit. We do not know yet if that will be able to be submitted by email, by mail, or if you're going to have to go in person. That has not been communicated yet. But we know that this will be through a process where you get a notice in the mail. If you haven't proved or you haven't provided that evidence by the time you show up at the polls, that's when you would be voting a provisional ballot. So you'll be voting a provisional ballot. And then, of course, for provisional ballots, you have until the second day after Election Day at 5 p.m. So if you vote on Election Day, that gives you 2 days to then present your evidence to the supervisor of elections to their satisfaction that shows your citizenship. And that's why this really is this whole additional series of hurdles, right? So even if you have that gold star on your driver's license, but for some reason you get flagged and they send you the notice, and you have to show your passport. You might even have a passport, but we don't know if that means you're going to have to find time to drive down to the supervisor of elections office and show your passport in person. So even for people who have the documents,
right,
this is a whole additional rigmarole of red tape they're going to have to jump through, again, just to keep voting as a U.S. citizen if they voted their whole life.
And it's also really, really important to know that this law is written to be retroactive to all voters. So after January 1st, 2027, every registered voter has to prove citizenship. So those notices will have to go out to
everybody,
registered voter. And if you are not flagged in the system that you are a citizen, you will get the mail, something in the mail that tells you that you are not.
Yeah, so it seems like the first and most important thing is to make sure that your address with the supervisor of elections office is up to date.
Yes.
You know, that they have your correct address.
So, yeah.
That's important for the purposes of this notice, and also because for purposes of being able to vote at the correct polling place. Because if you don't vote by mail, I mean, that's the other thing. If you vote by mail, you're not going to the polls in your you're not going to your precinct to vote on election day if you vote by mail. Mm. But if you wait until election day, you have to actually vote at your precinct that is associated with your current address. Now, I know at the polls you are allowed to change your address. Yes. But if you are planning to change your address at the poll and you didn't receive the letter from the supervisor's office about your documentation and the proof necessary to vote, it won't matter that you change your address. You're not going to be allowed to vote.
Well, we don't actually know how that's going to work yet. As I said, a lot of this hasn't happened, but you would be at least able to vote a provisional ballot. That is one of the most important things for voters to understand is you should never, if you believe you're registered to vote here in the state of Florida, you should never leave the polls without voting on election day. You can always vote a provisional ballot. But I think you're right. Like, so basically, there's a couple things that people can do that are general good practices to protect your right to vote and also will protect you from being impacted by HB 991, this terrible voter suppression law. So check your voter status at registertovoteflorida.gov. Make sure that your name and your address are both accurate. Now, another key thing that you can do here, and Teresa talked about this a little bit, but it's really important that your current driver's license number is in your voter file. Because if it is, and the driver's license database has you tagged as a citizen, then you're going to be able to avoid getting that notice, and you're not going to have to show additional evidence because they already have the evidence for you in the driver's license database. So there's a couple ways that you can do this. If you don't remember how you registered to vote, maybe you only gave your last four of your social, you can call your supervisor of elections and check and find out if they've got your driver's license number on file. You can also go to registertovoteflorida.gov and you can choose the option to request a new voter information card. And as you go through that process, enter your current driver's license number. That will get you a new voter information card in the mail. And it should also trigger the system to have your driver's license number on file. So those are some steps that can actually just really help smooth processes for you. They're pretty easy to take. And it can help ensure that you are not impacted by the requirement to provide additional documentation come 2027.
And while you're there doing all this at the supervisor's office or
online,
make sure that your request for a vote by mail ballot is renewed, because that does not carry over from election to election anymore. They changed that law, right,
it's
Teresa?
It's important to say that over and over, even if it's more than five times. Sorry there.
Yes, but even if it's more than five times, we need to keep saying
all
it.
All vote-by-mail ballots expire after every general election, so they all expired at the end of 2024. So if you have not renewed your vote-by-mail, you need to do that as soon as possible.
Yeah, if you want to vote in the midterms by mail, you need to renew your vote by mail request.
And that's another thing that's impacted by that driver's license issue. I know it's only probably, 15% of people have gotten that renewal notice yet, since we have 8 years and it's only been a year and a half, but a lot of people are impacted. So if you do try to go into vote by mail and renew it online and it doesn't recognize you, it could be because your driver's license isn't correct in the system anymore. And you can fix that easily by just calling your local supervisor of elections.
Oh, good Lord. All right. We have a call here from Jerry in Tampa. And if you want to talk to us about voting, give us a call at 813-239-9663. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I kind of wanted to address the last guy's comment and mention that, you know, I sent you some texts, by the way. I hope you get them. I sent you a couple texts for reference. But great intro. So, you know, the more things are computerized, you know, the more reliance we have on computerization, which is only increasing. I think when you look at what's happening in Iran and when people are just shutting down the internet, how volatile it is. So, you know, in terms of redundancy, if you're saying it over and over and over, you really can't say it enough.
Right.
Because either the information will be changed historically or history can potentially be changed as we're being shown right now. And then all these computer documents are highly volatile. They can be interrupted or intercepted or just completely erased. There's hundreds of examples of that. So, I mean, so yeah, you have to do your thing and put it out there as much as it happens until the nth hour.
But it's not just us, Jerry. It's you too.
I tell
everybody I know, because I'm kind of a voting evangelist. I do a lot of programs on this, on Midpoint, about voting. And and I'm a voting evangelist. So I'm constantly pestering people with information about voting. And I try to create little ambassadors for voting out of everybody I talk to. Not just my guests who are here with us in the studio, who make this part of their, you know, full-time gig. But all of us, you know, if voting's so important to you.
You can put me on your list. I'll do the best I can.
All right, Jerry. Thank you.
You can't do enough. So I don't buy that thing. Like, I don't buy that last caller. I don't buy that. We need to stay positive about it, and we need to do the best we can.
Yeah, and we need to whip everybody else up into a frenzy of voter responsibility. I mean, it's a huge civic responsibility.
Yeah, you're being positive. You're not trying to blow the world up or certain countries or, you know, people, men, women, and children. You're not trying to do that. You're trying to vote. You're just trying to get people to vote. It's not militaristic.
Right. Okay, Jerry. Thank you very much for your call.
Great
appreciate
job.
It. And we're going to be relying on you in Tampa to go out and round up more voters.
We got it. It's just got to do the best you can.
All right. And pass out this information. Thanks a lot. All right. Bye-bye. You know, and let me just give flowers where they are due, you know. The League of Women Voters is an enormous, wonderful, comprehensive source for information about voting. Y'all do a great, great job of informing the public. You're not just suing all the time. You're out there helping to get people registered to vote, informing people like you are today about changes in the voting laws, you know, explaining over and over again, sorry, Jerry, about how important it is to check with the Supervisor of Elections to make sure that all of your voting information is up to date. And so I have to give you your flowers, right?
Thank you. Fun fact, the League of Women Voters of the U.S. never filed a lawsuit ever in its history until last year because the federal government has no rights over voting
in the states, right? Yeah.
So our state leagues have filed many lawsuits whenever there's voter suppression.
Okay.
But the League of Women Voters of the United States shouldn't ever need to and hadn't before.
But they did. They did.
They did. They and just have three times.
Since
couple
Trump.
Times last year, and now there's an attack on vote by mail this year. So every time that there's a federal level stand to reduce our voting rights, the League of Women Voters of U.S. files a lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, of course, let's just be clear, that's only since the Trump administration, right?
And it has last year. So it just happened.
The second Trump administration.
The SAVE Act, with the SAVE Act moving, but we didn't have to file a lawsuit on that because it's been stuck in the Senate under filibuster.
That's the federal SAVE
Act. But when the executive order was filed with requiring citizenship documents was the first lawsuit there.
Trump's executive order.
And I do want to also mention, since we have only mentioned it, Amy mentioned it briefly, about college students, because we have a brand new League of Women Voters chapter in Hillsborough County. We have a League of Women Voters of of the University of South Florida, Tampa.
Excellent.
And our president of that league chapter is a democracy fellow with Campus Vote Project.
All right.
And they have been fighting for a long time to get a signature put on the USF ID so that students could use that when they go vote. And this new law
would take away the
college ID as a form of ID that they can use to vote. And so that impacts a lot of students, because a lot of students may not have a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And it has always been the case that students are allowed to vote either in their home state or in the state where they go to college. Most states allow that. And now it would be very difficult for an out-of-state student to vote in Florida, because in order to get a Florida ID, even if it's not a driver's license, you have to give up your home state driver's license. And most out-of-state students would not be willing to do that. So
yeah,
this creates a whole other, in addition to all the other problems we've already discussed, there's an extra layer of issues for college students.
Yeah, there's a number of IDs. I think there's something like 12 IDs now that are permitted in the state of Florida to be used at the polls to identify you so that you can vote. But this act now restricts those, a number of those IDs, the student ID being very significant. But there are a number of other IDs that would no longer be allowed, right?
Yes. So, and again, we can't say enough that this does not come into effect this year. So at the polls this year, if you're voting in person, there are 12 different IDs. If you have a photo on one of them, but it doesn't have a signature, you can present another ID.
Yeah, you can double up, one 100%. With a photo, one with a signature.
So if HB 991 goes into effect, if it goes into effect in January 2027, they would only accept government-issued IDs. But as Teresa mentioned, they actually put a specific restriction that, so they will only accept government-issued IDs, but not IDs issued by a government educational institution.
Yeah,
which is
no
wild.
Student
it was
ID.
That direct. So even if it was, you know, from a state school,
right.
And there's huge vetting processes for getting those IDs to begin with. So it's really egregious, because we see this vice grip on students, because it's going to be harder for them to register to vote, right? Because they don't have a Florida driver's license, so they're going to get flagged.
Or passport, of them.
They're going to have to provide their birth certificate or their passport. So that's hurdle number one. And then once they manage to get on the rolls, you know, you're looking at, well, what are they going to use when they go vote in person in order to prove? And all that ID, when you vote in person, it's just proving that you are who you say you are.
Right.
So what are they going to be able to use for that, again, if they don't have a passport? So it is really a squeeze on students, and especially students who aren't from, like, the, you know, upper, like, income brackets, who have a passport and that privilege to travel. So
right.
It's really horrible.
And even the birth certificate issue, does it have to be a certified, stamped, sealed birth certificate, which is more expensive than just, maybe your parents have a copy of your birth certificate, they could send you a, you know, a scan of it? Was that going to work, a scan? Or do you have to have a signed, sealed, notarized, you know, certified copy? We don't know yet.
I mean, we're kind of looking at what, since they are accepting what's at the DMV, it's like, well, do those rules count? Or what are the rules here? Because they haven't, you know what they also didn't do? Not only have they not told us explicitly what the rules are for this implementation, they didn't provide any money for it. So even our supervisors, they're asking our voter registration database to talk to the Department of Motor Vehicles database. They are asking for all these new processes. Huge confusion for voters. No money for our supervisor of elections.
So it's another unfunded mandate.
Yes, it is.
On the supervisors of elections.
I actually have the language from the bill, and it's the documents have to be an original or certified copy of a United States birth certificate, valid, unexpired United States passport.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the list, they... some of the other ones don't say they have to be original or certified.
Wow.
I love the passport one. The passport one drives me nuts, right? Because it's like, to get your passport, you had to prove you were a citizen, but they won't accept an expired passport.
Right.
I'm like, but you already proved you were a citizen to right. get your original passport.
Right, right.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, goodness. Okay, well, once again, let me just remind everybody, sorry, Jerry, we're going to say it again, that this will not go into effect until after the midterms, until after the 2026 election. Very important. So you're good, but it will give you this time until 2027 to get your ducks in a row and get all of the documentation necessary to preserve your right to vote. Because, my goodness, we really need everybody to vote in the next elections.
And I think if you're somebody who votes, hopefully everybody who's registered in a city and you vote in a city election, we are going to have spring 2027 municipal elections. And I think you should,
in Tampa.
If you're a, like, I love to vote on election day kind of person, it might be worth it to do early voting.
Yeah.
If you want to vote in person, vote on the first day of early voting.
Yeah.
See if you have a problem.
Right. Well, you know, we talk about that a lot every time we talk about voting here on Midpoint. Please, I know that there's some people who feel that it's some kind of ceremonial thing to vote on election day, but there's so many things that could trip you up and you could lose your vote. Do it on the first day of early voting if you want to vote in person.
And besides that, I think Amy should repeat the other suggestions for being ready.
Yeah, really quickly though, Amy.
Yeah, go check your voter status at registertovoteflorida.gov. Make sure your name and address are up to date and contact your supervisor of elections to make sure they have your current driver's license number on file. And I just want to remind everybody that people are spending billions of dollars to make you feel like voting doesn't matter and to make this harder for you to vote. They're spending billions of dollars on that for a reason, and that is because voting is powerful. Voting is how we push back. Voting is an act of resistance. They're putting hurdles in your way. Don't let those hurdles stop. Wait, do not let anybody take away your right to vote.
Right, exactly. They wouldn't be working so hard to take it away if it wasn't so powerful. All right, that's all we have time for today, folks. I'm sorry. But before we go, I want to remind you that tonight is the Wavemakers Live public history event at the Commodore at 7 p.m. with me in conversation with historian and author Robert Fiesler, who wrote the award-winning book American Scare, Florida's Hidden Cold War on Black and Queer Lives, about the Florida legislature's copycat House Un-American Committee activities and its attacks on gays, blacks, and progressives in the late 1950s and 60s, and the legislature's efforts to destroy all the records of this and hide this shameful history from the public. So tickets are only $10 in advance, $15 at the door, and it's tonight at the Commodore at 7 p.m. So go to WMNF.org/events for more information and to get your tickets. Thanks to my guests, Teresa Potter from the League of Women Voters of Hillsborough and Pasco Counties. If you want more information about the League or to join this very valuable organization, how can people find you, Teresa?
Our website is HCLWV.
HCLWV.org. .org. Okay. That's the local League chapter.
Yes.
Right. And you know, it's we encourage people to explore that website and join. And thanks to Amy Keith from Common Cause Florida, another very valuable pro-democracy organization that is building a government that works for all of us. Common Cause is also opposing mid-decade redistricting, so I'm sure we will have Amy back with us to discuss that topic in the future. We'll have to see what happens with the special session, right, when the legislature comes back to pass a state budget and talk about redistricting and property taxes. So thanks, Amy. How can people learn more about Common Cause Florida?
So just go to www.commoncause.org/Florida.
Okay. And thanks to Jessica Green, who always gets us on the air, and to Daria Miranova, our Midpoint show assistant, for taking your calls and writing our blog posts. Now stay tuned for Duncan Strauss with Talking Animals. Duncan's in the studio, ready to go after the NPR News, followed by the conversation with Mario and Joe. We are WMNF Tampa, and we are out of here. Thanks.